Beloved listeners, if I were to tell you that the subject of my next story was a very great Indian politician, a philosopher, an advocate for social reform, a man who joined the Indian National Congress in the 1920s and fought for a better life for the Dalits, you would naturally assume I was just talking about Gandhi. But the answer is not the beloved Mahatma. It is someone called Eride Venkatappa Ramasamy, better known by the simpler moniker of Periya. Extraordinary story is about to unfold, because here's a bloke whose philosophies were banned from publication in Hindi, but he should be just as revered in contemporary society, whether Indian or otherwise. Now, here to tell us more about him is Aishwarya Avraj, an award-winning freelance journalist for South India Today and other publications, and working towards a master's in philosophy. And she joins us from New Delhi for her LNL debut. Welcome to our program, and of course there's no better time to revisit his philosophies on women, because India has to be the most dangerous place in the world to be a woman.
Hi, Phillips. Thank you for having me. And it's my honor, I would say, that I get another space to talk about Periya, or better to say, talk about my interpretations or my readings of Periya. There are two forms of crime that you would find is very prominent. One is sexual violence, and the second is honor killing. So honor killing is an example of how the status quo, which the caste-based identity markers makes, is so much held relevant by the society. So when Periya talks about women liberation, he also talks about how he sees the nature of patriarchy and the nature of slavery that is imposed upon women by the nature of society that Indian society is.
Let's take a look at Periya's work. He critiqued Brahmanism, or Brahmanical patriarchy, especially in terms of its attitudes to women. Tell us about that.
Okay, so when we speak about violence against women in India, it is very necessary to observe that the sort of patriarchy that exists in India is not just patriarchy. It's filled with the ideas of Brahmanical patriarchy and caste supremacy. So caste is very, very prominent identity marker. So the idea of caste purity, the idea of Varnashram Dharma, as they say in the Hindu sacred, quote-unquote sacred texts, is very important. So Periya, who also comes from Indian society, who is an individual who has lived in Indian society, understands that we cannot just speak about rights of women, we cannot just speak about freeing women from the spaces of patriarchy, we cannot speak against violence done to women, until unless we don't address the idea of Brahmanical patriarchy. Now, Periya does not give this word to the readers, Brahmanical patriarchy. It was later theorized. But when Periya talks about women, he talks about the institution of family. He talks about how family is the most relevant yet smallest social institution that works in the society. So the ideas of purity, the ideas of endogamy, the ideas of who can love who.
I have to ask you this. I'm astonished to learn from a BBC Indian report that more than 40% of women told a recent government survey it was okay for a man to beat his wife if she disrespected her in-laws, neglected her home or children.
I think, again, this BBC report, as I was speaking earlier, the idea of Brahmanical patriarchy, this report finds its origin in the idea of how patriarchy works in India itself. And I'll tell you how. Periya has written a book which is called Why Women Got Enslaved. which was in Tamil, but then it got translated in English later. Periyar brings about the idea that how the Hindu marriage in India or the Hindu texts in India lays some ethics, some moral codes to be followed by women. And those codes state that women should be protected by their father when she is not married. And after being married, the woman should be protected by their husband. So the woman's body is not seen as a body which has its autonomous rights. It's always seen as the body belongs to someone. Someone has to protect it. So if there is something which is protected by someone, the possibility occurs that someone can come and seize that body also. So there is the center of violence, how the violence is created, the place of center of violence itself is located on in upon the woman's body. So within the system of marriage only, if the status of wife is seen as a slave to the husband, or better to put it like this, if husband is seen as the master of the wife, there is a power hierarchy between the man and the woman, as it is reimposed, confirmed, and sanctioned by the Brahminical patriarchy. Now, if the woman is not a wife, if woman is not anybody's wife, then also the body does not hold an autonomous right, because then there are layers of caste also.
We've just seen huge protests in India after three men from Hathras were cleared of an horrendous rape and murder of a 19-year-old Dalit woman in Uttar Pradesh, and caste was central to that, wasn't it?
Okay, so very interestingly, since we are talking about violence against women, recently the convicts of the Hathras rape case. Now, Hathras rape case happened in UP in like just 2 years back. And in that case, a Dalit girl was raped and assaulted, and physical violence was done against her by the people of the dominating caste community of that village, of upper caste community of that village. And recently, the court has cleared the predators. The court has come to a conclusion that no offense was done, although the survivor has died. Now, when you read the reports, there are audio recordings. There are recordings where the survivor's family is speaking about how the upper caste men has assaulted their child. There are notes, audio notes of the victim, the survivor who later dies, that how people tried to force themselves upon her. But the police does not record all this. The police says that there is no explicit mention of the sexual violence by the survivor in those audios. And on this ground, the court clears the predators. So now when we analyze the sexual violence done against women in India, or when the women themselves are allowing their husbands to inflict this violence upon them, it is not just a case of internalized patriarchy, but it is also a case of internalized caste-based identity in India. Because then we also have, on the other hand, survivors of cases like Hathras case, where the victim and the family wants the justice, but the state so much believes in the idea of hierarchy or the power domination that the state or the Supreme Court themselves are not able to provide justice to the victim. So we have two responses of people. On the one hand, there are wives who have accepted slavery, but on the other hand, there are sex-based violence or sexual violence done to the minorities, where the angles of religion and other marginalized identity are also into play.
Periyar wrote a book called Why Women Were Enslaved in 1942, but it was banned from being translated into Hindi. Why?
So Periyar's book Sachi Ramayan was translated in Hindi in year 1968. And Lalai Bodh comes from the state of UP, Uttar Pradesh, in India. Now, Uttar Pradesh is also one of the states which is seen as the place where abuse or violence against women or violence against the minority, the religious minorities, as well as the caste-based minorities, or say the caste-based marginalized communities, is at its peak, violence against them. So in UP, when Periyar's work was translated into Hindi, it was banned by the then government. Even in year 2007, there is one leader from BJP. He goes on to say on record that Periyar's idea about liberation of women, Periyar's idea about women's sexuality is very dangerous to the society, and one should not tend to read Periyar's work or Periyar's ideas. So that puts us in a very interesting position, that what does Periyar say about women's liberation that most often people in general and some of the governments are so afraid of? What are his ideas that women or the minorities should not come across? So that makes Periyar, his ideas, more to say, very interesting to read.
He was the most remarkably progressive human being. He believed in marriage as a free choice. He was opposed to child marriage. Heavens above, he was also sympathetic to inter-caste marriages, wasn't he?
So Periyar speaks about love, the idea of love and the idea of marriage a lot. There was a movement which was initiated and carried forward in the leadership of Periyar, which was called self-respect movement. So the idea of self-respect marriages have a very important place in the self-respect movement. Now, it is very interesting to note that why it is called self-respect movement. So Periyar's idea is that the people of marginalized communities and women especially have received such kind of violent treatment, such kind of traumatic experience, have received such kind of discriminatory othering that they most often do not have the sense of self-confidence. So to instill the idea of self-confidence in them so that they are more aware about their identity, they are more assertive about their rights, and therefore they can move towards having a more peaceful, a more healthy, a life full of well-being. So Periyar gives the idea of self-respect marriages. So in self-respect marriages, there is no need of both the consenting individuals to have any priest to get married. So having a priest is very important in Hindu form of marriages. So Periyar makes the individuals free from such kind of discriminatory rituals or such kind of Brahminic rituals. So he says that there is no importance, there is no relevance of having a priest in the wedding. There is no relevance of having the mantras, the Sanskrit mantras, which are mostly read in the ceremonies of marriages in Hindu marriages in Indian society. So he says that there is no need of that. And there is no need of having all those astrologers and setting an auspicious day to get married. And in the cases of a marriage where the two party who are getting married, who consent to get married, who are in love with each other, the families don't allow, then they can also marry without the permission of the family. Now, this is very revolutionary thought in the times when Periyar was speaking of all these ideas, because at that point of time, the consent of the family was very important. The wife has to go through those rituals, which basically tell that husband is now, henceforth, the master of the wife. So therefore, Periyar goes on to reject all these.
And Periyar supported the right to divorce too, quite radical in the 1940s.
So basically the Hindu marriage is seen as some divine companionship, a companionship where the husband and the wife are in some kind of divine partnership, and hence they could not part. Even if the husband is committing violence on wife, the wife has taken the husband as the master, therefore the wife should not leave the husband. Now Periyar questions this idea. Periyar questions this idea, and Periyar goes on to say that if the wife wants a divorce, she should be having the right to divorce the husband, because he comes to the idea of love in the idea of marriage. He puts the idea of love in the idea of marriage, and he says that love is something where people, two consenting individuals, come together, not for the sake of the society, but for the sake of their own friendship.
Tell us about Periyar's thoughts on birth control and family planning.
The point which Periyar makes long ago, is that women should be given their sexual liberty. If a woman does not want to have children, the woman should be allowed to not have children on choice. He even goes on to talk about test tube babies. Although he doesn't use this literal term, test tube babies, but he makes a prediction that so much of the woman's body sort of changes in giving birth to the child. Her life changes in upbringing the child. So maybe women can make a choice of not having a child. And even in that case, when the woman does not want to birth the child using her own body, and if she wants still wants a child, they can use some science and technology. So at this point, Periyar accepts the modernity, which was coming at that point of time globally, and which also happened to come in India with open arms. But he doesn't accept modernity just for the sake of accepting modernity. He accepts modernity by placing it logically in how it would be useful in context of Indian society, and especially in context of women liberation.
Prime Minister Modi, on the 75th anniversary of India as a nation, called for a change in the mentality towards women and our citizens to fight misogyny. This surely is an important step.
I think that in any country, if the Prime Minister or the bureaucrats or any position holding office makes any kind of statement which is anti-discriminatory, is always good at the face of it, because statements like these hold a mass appeal, because there are many people in the country who supports BJP, who supports Mr. Modi, because they obviously have a large voter group in India, and that is why they have come to the power yet again. But we need to go one step further and analyze how real is that statement. We must also try to analyze that is the government, is the state, is the bureaucracy taking efforts in the direction of whatever statement has been made by any position holding leader, any influential leader, or the prime minister of the country. And it becomes symbolism if efforts are not made in that direction. As I was speaking about the Hathras case, and as I pointed out that the court fails to prove the charges on the predators because of how the police handled the case, because of how the casteist mentality of the society is, because of how the cases of honor killing are reported when there are cases of intercaste marriage, intercommunity marriage. So my point is that until unless the functioning of the society, of how violence is internalized in the culture, which also reflects in the domains of bureaucracy, in the domains of other mechanisms of the state, is not worked upon, such statements would just stand null and void and would be just for symbolic beauty or relevance only.
I thank you for this, and I thank you for introducing us to this extraordinary Periyar, who was thinking of these things, heavens above, in the 1940s. It has been a privilege to talk to you, and I hope our paths cross again. My guest has been Aishwarya Avraj, freelance journalist based in New Delhi.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.